liberty and justice for all.
Welcome to the Thursday, April 2nd, 2009 regular meeting for the Los Osos Community Services District. Ms. Vega, can we have a roll call, please?
Director Sennett?
Here.
Director Sasania?
Here.
Director Kelly?
Here.
Vice President Ohilski?
Present.
President Sparks?
Here. Mr. Seitz, could we have a report out of closed session?
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the audience. At approximately 6 o'clock, the board did adjourn to closed session to discuss those items listed on the agenda. First of all, I must report that we did not get a chance to discuss each of the items that are listed here, but I will go over the ones that we did. And the board may or may not go into closed session at the conclusion of this meeting to further consider the closed session agenda. But under and pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9B, related to pending litigation, we did have discussions related to the bankruptcy litigation, the American Alternative Insurance litigation, and the LOCSD versus Golden State. This is the groundwater adjudication. In all those circumstances, they heard an update from legal counsel but took no reportable action. The other items listed on the agenda were not discussed and may or may not be the subject of further closed session after today's agenda. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Mr. Seitz. And we're going to start off tonight with the administrative and committee.
That part of this report?
I'm not going to be able to address that question. Sorry.
Vice President Ohilski.
Yeah, if I could answer that. At the last Emergency Services Advisory Committee meeting, Chief Veneris took on the task of identifying streets that didn't go through and other streets that were problematic for emergency access. That was to come back to our next Emergency Services Committee meeting, and then it will come to the board. And he did prepare that list.
It's in our packet.
Yeah, I was going to say it's part of the Emergency Services Advisory Committee packet here.
Okay.
But it will be coming to you after it goes back to the Emergency Services.
Okay. Thanks for the clarification.
Thank you, Director Olszewski.
Any other board questions? Thank you very much for coming.
You.
Second item will be the District Utilities Manager Report. Mr. Milanis.
Thank you, President Sparks, the board, staff, and the public. You have before you the packet for the utilities. It was we've got a lot of ongoing things now. Don't really have any real highlights to report tonight other than to give you a quick update. We will be receiving our temporary operating permit. This is for the upper aquifer well. As you know, the new well at South Bay is going to start supplementing some of our water demands from the upper aquifer. And in that process, there is an application where we have to amend our water supply permit. So I don't have any real news other than to tell you we have been in contact with the Department of Health Services, and they are ready to issue us a 120-day permit. And how this works is as we start up the well, we will monitor. There's nitrates, obviously. We receive results. That's in your packet. Are slightly over the MCL. We expected that and anticipated that. Nothing that is earth-shaking, but we do have to blend. So with that, that concludes my report, and I'm glad to answer any questions.
Mr. Milanis, what is the potential contribution of that well in percentage to the total district production? What will it be, have the capacity to do?
The well itself is the pump test showed us it will yield safely about 75 gallons a minute, and I believe it's about 100 acre feet per year. So while it's not a huge volume, it is chipping away at that demand and our supply. And of course, the real benefit is we are not pulling from that lower, but it's starting to move that production into the upper aquifer.
Mr. Melanis, on the rented drainage pump, do you have in here that you've taken delivery? Do you know how long we plan? Oh, do you know? I was asking Mr. Melanis about the rented pump for the drainage for 6th and Elmore. Do you know how long we're going to hang on to that?
I'm sorry.
The rented drainage pump for 6th and Elmore. How long will we be hanging on to that before we return that?
We had that we brought it in, I believe it arrived in December, and we opted to send it back at this point. While typically the wet weather season does extend through April, I don't know, we're kind of feeling real sunshiny, so we thought we'd just take advantage and not have to spend that money.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Melanis.
You bet.
And next is the District General Manager report. Mr. Cooney?
The final EIR concerning the wastewater project was to be completed by the county on March 30th and scheduled for consideration to the Planning Commission at their April 23rd meeting. The district staff will prepare a response for consideration by the board at our April 16th meeting. So any member of the public who wants to present any comments or concerns and they wish considered it for inclusion in the response, if they would have it to the district office by April 7th. I have April 5th there, but that's a Sunday. So if you'd have it to us by April 5th so we can have it in the agenda packet for board approval on the 16th. At the March 19th, a board of directors meeting, the board directed the district engineer to obtain proposals for qualified firms for the appraisal of the Midtown property district. So when they ask their questions, you kind of get a perspective of how things are kind of going on the statewide level. It's a very worthwhile thing to go to. So if anyone is interested, let us know, and we will make an appointment, because you will have a specific appointment time, like you'll be there like at, you know, noon. They're very short meetings with the legislator members, but they're very informative. There's also conferences and presentations going on during the day concerning just special districts in California. Also, at the Finance Committee meeting, there was a public comment concerning the cost of all things computer-related to the district. Staff is preparing a white paper on the costs associated with all computer-related items, and this will be an informational item that will appear on a future agenda for both the board and the public to see. So, and if we have any suggestions or comments, anybody on the staff, when we prepare this, have any suggestions or for cost reductions, we'll certainly be looking at that too and make those recommendations at that time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cooney. Any questions from the board? Okay, seeing none, we'll go to the committee reports and the standing advisory and ad hoc committees. Why don't we go ahead and start with the Emergency Services Committee.
Thank you, Mr. President. You have minutes in the agenda package from the previous meetings. What I would like to just briefly give an update on the last meeting that was held. We had a couple items that we discussed. The first item was a discussion of mitigation and potential concerns that we may want to have included in the county's approval of or consideration of the wastewater project, one of them which was the dead-end streets that may be able to be addressed during the construction of the wastewater project. And that list was prepared by Chief Vanaris, and actually I was wrong. It's included in the general manager's report. The second thing that we talked about We had a discussion about the maintenance program on fire hydrants and how that program was handled by the various water purveyors, and what expertise and technical ratings needed to be handled by the people doing the fire hydrant maintenance program. We had a discussion about water pressure testing and modeling for fire protection. And the last thing that we did is we had about an hour and 15-minute discussion on long-term priorities for the fire department and the community relative to emergency services. What we did last meeting was we said we would discuss the stub-in streets next time to come up with the priority list, which Chief Vanaris pretty much did, as well as going ahead and setting short-term and long-term priorities for the fire department for budgeting purposes. And I would just like to announce right now for the public, we are going to try to reschedule the Emergency Services Advisory Committee meeting this month so we can meet before the next board meeting to bring our recommendations back prior to the next board meeting. We will be in contact with the members, Director Cicina and myself, to try to get that so we can bring the recommendations relative to the dead-end streets and the street stubs to the board for consideration as far as our response to the Planning Commission relative to the wastewater project. And I think that sums it up, unless, Chuck, you have something to add to that? If I could just go on with my ad hoc committee while I'm already up here.
Yeah, while you're on that, proceed. Yeah.
Secondly, the ad hoc committee working on removal of the fence. We have had discussions with Fish and Wildlife Service, and I've had a couple of conversations with Julie Vandeweer at Fish and Wildlife, and we are in the process right now of setting up a meeting for her and her supervisor to come up to the site and view the fence and work out a resolution of the issue so we can do the removal of the fence. We envision her and her supervisor coming up here and meeting with both Chuck, myself, and with district staff. That should happen within the next 3 weeks. Do you have anything to add to that? No.
I think it's important to consider, if the fence is removed, what other issues are remaining that right. might also need environmental addressing. Right.
Well, I think it's relative at least to the snail portion of it. We'll have the and any other items that Fish and Wildlife has jurisdiction over, we'll have an answer by the time they leave here. That concludes my two reports.
Thank you. And Director Kelly, water utilities.
On Wednesday, March 11th, so we met again on Saturday at 9:30. It was a continued meeting, and we spent 2 hours wandering around Los Osos. We had George guided us through 8th and El Moro, 16th and Paso. We went down to the outfall at 3rd and El Moro, 15th, and where else did we go?
Don and Mitchell.
And we actually had, it was very informative, and the entire committee participated, so that was really great that everybody was there, and we even had a member from the public, so I really appreciated everybody's time. So we'll just continue to look at and see what sort of drainage budget we do have and see if there's any further projects we might be able to implement over the next couple of years to continue to alleviate some of those areas of highest concern.
Thank you, Director Kelly. And how about the ad hoc strategic planning?
Okay. This is a lot tougher than I thought it would be, just so you all know. This is very difficult. You think you have something, and then it just starts to bloom. So I hope that my fellow directors have had an opportunity to glance at some of the suggestions that I've made. I never have done this before, so this is all new for me, so I'm having to do a lot of discussing and research to try to figure out what the best approach would be for us. I would like to hear from you in the short term or long term or what you think we might need to do. I do recommend that in the short term we do at least review the previous vision and not the vision, the previous strategic planning, that documents that were produced by the district, and then realize that we do have a mission statement that we either need to continue to work under or revise. And we don't have a vision statement that we operate under that I can find. The only vision statement that I can find is still from LOCAC's 1995. And what I've been working on over this past week is actually looking at what other districts have done, other community services districts, what the county has. So when we do start to discuss this in further detail, we're all going to need to kind of be aware of what we want to bring forward as far as what our vision is or how we think we're going to operate and what our priorities are. And really the reason, and I hope you had a chance to look through some of the things I attached, but there is really the most significant reason why I think we can do this or should do this and really ought to take this seriously is then what we can do is provide a framework so that when we have elections or, you know, changes in the board, there's something, there's guidelines there that people can look at and work with. Our strategic planning's a little out of date. And so I really would encourage us, if we want to tackle it, that we do it wholeheartedly. And if not, then we need to make that decision and put it off either a year or two or for a different board. So I would, if we have an opportunity to discuss it, I'm open. But otherwise, that's my report.
Director Cicina?
I don't see where you can put off strategic planning for another year or two or day or some other time, another board. It's something we have to do. I only had a first chance to look through the different models that were presented. And ideally, I'd like to work from the organic model, but I think that takes a little while to get to that point where it's just an ingrained values discussion all the time is what it seemed. And you never stray from that vision. But in the meantime, it looked like maybe one of the more focused, briefer attempts, just to maybe refocus ourselves on what has been done so that we're not reinventing and then move forward.
And that's a good point. Yeah, exactly.
Vice President Ohilski.
Oh, I just wanted to make one comment. I do think we need to proceed with the strategic planning process. And I'd just like to ask the question, the rearrangement of the room, I assume, is a result of what's happened in the committee so far?
That's, yes.
You're on the committee.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to give you some credit here. I would like to comment on the arrangement of the room. I think just from the initial time that we've been out here, I think it's much better for communicating between the board members and staff. Because when we were in a linear fashion before, we weren't able to make eye contact with any of the other board members without leaning backwards or forward. So I appreciate that, but I do have a concern about the distance from one end of the table to the other. It seems like we're going a long way. So if there is some way to facilitate a little more closeness, I would appreciate it. But I think the angling and that is really, really nice.
Yeah, I agree. If we maybe this table could be a little shorter, a little bit on an island over here. And do you have any...
No man's land.
Director Kelly, any thought? I agree we should review the documents as well as the mission planning statements. And any thoughts on timing for a strategic planning meeting?
If this is something we want to do, just at least review what we have and take a look at our vision and mission statement, I believe that we could do that within just a regular meeting time or a special meeting. I don't think it's a 4 or 5 hour. If we prepare properly and we have, we would need a recorder and someone to help us run the meeting. I think we could really nail it down and get some good work started and at that point decide where we want to go. Really, once we clarify the mission and vision and hear from the public, then we need to get to our committees and give our committees the opportunity to then turn around and provide us feedback on, and Marshall's committee's already started, and checks on some of the prioritization and strategic that they see within their committees. Drainage and water, we're still educating ourselves on what we do. So I could see us being able to have some sort of process put together. When do you want it? I mean, ideally I'd like to have until June. I don't think it can be so carefully tied to our budget as we had hoped. I mean, we had kind of talked about trying to have it done before the budget. like I said, this is just a lot more work than I realized. I'm trying to pull it together and consult with the people in the community that are training me because I really don't understand. So June, if we had to, we could do it at a second meeting in May.
Yeah, so I think if the directors could review the documents and the additional prior documents, and we can ask staff for those, and then potentially at the next meeting we could agree on a date, first or third meeting in June, sounds like target dates right now.
And then what I would do is I would really sit down and work and really scope some real specific target areas that we would look at for discussion. And I'd be happy to, you know, hear back as much as I can from folks. And I'll work with Mitch. I'd like to be able to sit down with Mitch a little bit more and talk about some more of his experiences in doing this type of project. And I think we can be prepared to at least start. I mean, it's going to be interesting. I don't know if anybody else has been involved in this type of process before. Mine's been minimal, so it should be fun.
Well, working with the state, we've gone through this process many times, and quality circles and you know, all types of things. And the one thing I've gotten from this is that you can make mission, vision statements, but really you're stuck with the policies that you develop. And nothing's more frustrating than to utter out of one side of your mouth a lofty goal, and then your policies hamper you and hamstring you. And they may be valid, but you can't have it both ways, and it's frustrating and it alienates people.
Right. We need to understand what our policies are when we're a services district. Does our vision encompass the services that we provide? We really do have to narrow it down. And again, the models that I gave you are somewhat more reflective of nonprofit, but we can adapt it to what we need to do.
I just wanted to assure Director Sennett that this will be a much more manageable scale of effort than what we're used to dealing with when you have 22,000 respondents as you work for the state and that kind of thing, or more. This might be fun, actually.
I would like the culture of, as I'm developing it, my hope is that it's somewhat inspiring and fun and is an opportunity for input. And just, you know, it's going to be what we want it to be. We'll make it what we want it. It's our planning session. It's really up to us what we want to bring to the table to do that. So I would make it as simple and as productive as possible.
Thank you, Director Kelly. And how about the RAC? There's an important meeting coming up.
There is an important meeting coming up. We had a meeting on just yesterday. Oh, yes, yesterday. Spend a lot of time talking about those darn little quagga mussel things, snails, mussels. But they did discuss quite a bit pump testing and in specifics as it relates to Leticia Ranch. I'll do a report and submit that for the next packet. There is a special meeting on Saturday beginning at 8:30 in the board chambers. The goal is to have it be conducted and completed by noon. If it needs to go further, the committee's been advised that it may extend into 12:30, that it may take 4 hours. We did receive an additional supplemental packet yesterday that included from the county, and it included some site pictures, the letter from the California Coastal Commission, the survey, and what I really truly enjoyed, and if people have an opportunity to get this, I've already spoken to a couple people about it, the Layperson's Guide to Water Rights from the Water Education Foundation out of Sacramento. It is really literally for laypersons. I read it in about an hour. It was very informative and very, very interesting if you're interested at all in water and water rights. So I would recommend that even the district maybe get one of these and have it on hand in the office. And if you want to get one, to go ahead and go to the watereducation.org website and order one. So the RAC will have a presentation from the county. There will be some discussion, I believe an hour of public comment, possibly longer if necessary, and then further discussion, and then we'll be closed. So the public is invited to come. It will be televised to be replayed. It won't be taped live, but it will be replayed. So People are welcome.
Actually, I believe we are going live.
You are going to go live? They're going live.
Thank you, Director Kelly. You're done. And the Finance Advisory Committee, two meetings on March 16th. We discuss financial reports, the warrants, the appraisal process for Cabrillo that was approved at our board meeting on the 19th. And then the final water rate study and a discussion of just a roundtable discussion of the reserve policy. I'd like to thank Burke Vanderhoof and Lisa Gonzalez from the committee who are going to look at the financial reporting format that we're doing as well as look at reserve policy as well to that committee. We also held a meeting this past Monday, the March 30th. Again, reviewed the financial reports and the warrant register, and which are on our agenda tonight, as well as the tax allocation proposals in our board packet, agenda item 5C. And then Mr. Cooney provided an overview of the budget recommendations. There's some strong discussion, particularly when, and I'd like you to save your comments for when you discuss it tonight, on issues such as particularly on the cost savings from taping meetings, and some strong sentiment expressed regarding that for both for and against. And then another topic there was, we'll discuss later tonight, amongst the committee was having a part-time versus full-time general manager and the pluses and minuses of that. And as well, I'd like to note that our next meeting is going to be on April 21st, and Mitch will be coming back with the administrative allocation proposals that will lead into next year's budget. So any questions on the Financial Advisory Committee reports? And there's the written reports out on the table, I believe. And then the next item is LOCAC. Director Kelly attended. I attended LOCAC this last month and last Thursday, and just provided to LOCAC an overview of ongoing activities within the district to LOCAC. And I'd like to open it up to board members for the end of April to see if there's any volunteers to go before LOCAC at the end of this month. I know Director Kelly went last month as well and the month prior. And any volunteers for April? Director Cicina?
That would be the 23rd.
Okay. Director Kelly's got her hand raised. Is that a volunteer?
If no one else volunteers, otherwise I'll be back up if someone wants to take it, and then call me when you back out.
Okay. Go ahead, and if you need an alternate, I'll be happy to volunteer.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks. So with that, that's the Administrative and Committee reports, and now we're going to want to find out from directors if there's going to be any consent items pulled.
I'd like to pull. Never mind.
Going once, going twice. Okay, so all the consent items will remain on the consent for approval. And with that, we'll take public comment on the administrative and committee reports and all consent items A, B, C, and D.
Good evening. Leon Golden. With all due respect, I think that having this all these administrative reports, committee reports, and consent calendars and unpublic comment lumped all together is not a good way to go. With all due respect, I think that it would not take a lot of work to divide them up and do them by subject matter, because otherwise somebody gets up and talks about A, then someone talks about C, then someone talks about B. There's no continuity, and there's no really opportunity for somebody, for someone who may want to talk about A, B, and C to get an opportunity to do so. So I would most respectfully suggest that you reconsider lumping these all together. If, for example, you asked, does anybody have anything to say about public comment on committee reports, they could come up and take care of that and then go on to the next thing, whatever is next. And last but not least, the district doesn't have enough money to buy you the proper microphones. I understand that if you're not trained, you don't talk into the microphone. But Joe, you especially, you've got your paper to the side. You're reading from your paper. We can't understand you back there. Well, I think that's sufficient. Talk into the microphone. That's how you communicate. It also leaves you with a feeling that you're afraid to look us in the eye.
Thank you, Mr. Golden. Next speaker, please.
Good evening. George Taylor, Los Osos. This is in regard to a comment that was made by our interim general manager about the notice regarding the timeline for submitting comments to be included in the Los Osos Wastewater EIR. I think that that is an item that would be very would work very well if there was a notice posted on the bulletin board outside the CSD office as to this this item, because I think that people will would like to know exactly when to do it, how to do it, and so that they don't miss the timeline. And my other comment is that I want to congratulate our interim general manager. He's a man that listens and he acts. And tonight is proof enough for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. And I guess, Mr. Cooney, I guess we should emphasize, you talked about April 5th and 7th. You're asking for comments for the Planning Commission meeting by April 7th. And again, even if you don't get comments into the General Manager by April 7th, I would suggest, and you have comments for the board, because we'll be considering it at our April 16th meeting, to still send comments into the board and to the General Manager, you know, before that meeting.
The reason for the 7th is the 9th is the agenda deadline at 3 o'clock, so to prepare the agenda for the 16th meeting. So it's distributed on Friday, the 10th? The 10th.
Martha Golden, I guess it's sort of trivia time. I sort of semi-like the arrangement. I certainly concur with the board that they get a chance to look at each other and at the staff, but the arrangement, because the room is small and because the podium is where it is located, means that half of the public cannot see the board or a large portion of the board. And since this is a public meeting, I would hope that you're very concerned that the public have as much direct contact with the board as is possible. So please try to get some space engineer to rearrange it so that it fits your needs and it fits the needs of the public. The other matter that I have is, correct me if I'm wrong, but it is my understanding that the EIR is not posted on the county website unless that's changed, which means that anybody who's interested has to get a copy at the library, or please tell me if there are other handy sources for that report so that if people do want to look at it or at least look at summaries of it, they have an easy way to access it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Golden. Mr. Cooney, how many copies are we going to get from the county at the district office? Do you know?
I don't know. No, I really don't know. We could get a hold of the county tomorrow and make sure we get – I'm sure they'll send us some, or one anyway, and we can reproduce it.
I talked to Mr. Hutchinson on Tuesday, and I'm sorry, I can't remember, but they were sending over, I thought, at least two copies for the district on Tuesday. And I expect that they will have it posted. I was hoping they'd have it posted by today. Director Kelly.
I contacted Mr. Hutchinson as well. It's an 1,100-page document, and so it doesn't sound like it'll be posted on the website. I'm going to go down and have a portion of it. You can take a disc from the county and take it to Kinko's and have whatever portion of it you want to have printed, but it is an 1,100-page document, according to him.
Vice President Olhilsky.
Just a quick response. I think that the podium issue, I think you need to acknowledge or recognize the fact that not only can you not see us, but we can't see you. So I think it works both ways. In fact, that was my initial comment that this podium issue needed to be addressed because we can't see half of the audience. So that issue will be addressed, I guarantee you that one. But again, it's both ways here. We can't see you. You can't see us. But we will address that issue, guaranteed. I know the people on the other side of the room don't know what I'm talking about, but from here it's real clear.
There's room up here. If speakers want to come up and sit by me, and Mr. Acilia.
Frank Acilia, Los Alamos. What I want to address is the water issues and water committee. Since the state has pulled back on the allocation of state water. Actually, it was 15%. Now it's 20% from the last information I've read on their allocation. And then just recently, again, the Tribune published an article about water problems in the North County. Atascadero and Paso Robles are having their issues, even though I believe they do have supposedly supplement water from Nacimiento. So they're looking at possibly mandated conservation issues in that area. And why I bring this up is I'm wondering if this water district has developed a possible emergency plan of what they can do or coordinated that plan with the county in case there's a problem with the water here in Los Osos. I haven't heard of any emergency plan. I think it would be something that this board would like to take a look at in the future and not wait till something does happen and then you have to move quickly and maybe not as efficiently, effectively for the community. The other issue I want to bring up is that Maria brought up about her packet in regard to what you received at the RAC, and one of them was the letter from the Coastal Commission dated, I believe, March 25th, 2009, and it's in regard to the draft EIR, and they talk about the permitting issues that they have concern with the wastewater project. And they are also concerned with groundwater. They're concerned that the county moves to tertiary treatment. Now, where I'm going with this is that they talk about that with tertiary, they say that the water can have beneficial use such as groundwater augmentation, irrigation, habitat enhancement, etc. I'm wondering if this board or committees is interested in bringing some ideas to the county in dealing with this issue, since it seems to be a strong issue with the Coastal Commission and may, if this is not dealt with, may not be permitted. Now, the other issue is a copy of this for the community, because I got mine through a friend through an email. And if Maria can say where this is available on website, or if there's a copy available at the district office for the community, for those people who don't have access to a computer or don't utilize that system, I think that would be helpful because I think it is good reading, and maybe a copy at the library would be appropriate too. Thank you.
Dr. Kelly.
I believe that there is a copy now on the county website. If not, I actually got my original copy off of a blog, so I'm happy to turn over my copy to the district and for the front office. But I do believe that it's on the county website now.
It is on the RAC website with the agenda
Right.
For, yeah, for Saturday's agenda. It's included
yes, it
in
is.
The agenda package.
But only on the RAC website. It's
right,
not under
the
county
right.
Los Osos Wastewater Project document list.
Right. If you go to the RAC website, though, it is listed, included in the agenda package for Saturday.
Could we put it on the district's website and make it really easy and available everywhere?
Well, could we just put a link to the RAC website on our
website? Yeah, that would be fine. But I somehow identify that letter. I mean, I'd like people to know this is where I find the Coastal Commission letter. That's an important letter.
But I'm happy to turn mine over at this current time if anybody's interested in looking at it right now.
Ms. Taylor?
My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos. I do not know where all of the reports were left, placed, or are at this present time, but strategic planning was very important to the former one of the former general managers, Bruce Buell, and he took voluminous minutes and supposedly had them recorded. Now, I don't know if Ms. Vega knows where they are. I don't know where they are, but there was strategic planning done, and many audiences were comprised of the public here in Los Osos. So that would seem to be available perhaps someplace in the archives. Last but not least, when it comes to water, and the ISJ seems to be the predominant force as to the conservation and discussion of water for this community, since we have the different purveyors here. And after talking to council, I asked the question, how do we know what the ISJ, is approving or not approving? And he said there are certain restrictions as to what information can be out. What information there is available, I think, should be out. Are they going to require a particular conservation plan? Is the ISJ going to require that Sunset Terrace have meters? Are these things that can or cannot be discussed? Or if they are able to be discussed, I think the public should know, because we are in a very great world of hurt as far as saltwater intrusion into our basin. We have one basin. We have no supplemental water, as many areas in this county do. So take that into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor.
Don Bearden, Los Osos. I was just looking at the final EIR and its comments on the website, on a website last night. It's lowwp-eir.net/lowwp-eir/eir.aspx. And that's it's a website that the county set up to look at all that stuff. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bearden. Don, would you mind repeating it again, since there's a lot of on that website address?
It's lowwp-eir.net/lowwp-eir/eir.aspx.
It sounds like
did you find a link to that from the county's normal website, Public Works website?
No, I had to look at the
I didn't
previous
find
speakers and where they told you where the website was.
Okay. Mr. Dugan.
David Los Osos, bringing up the issue about water, I think I've seen that publication, several others, but actually based my immediate knowledge on water code. And one of the findings of the state legislature was that the use of potable water for agricultural purposes is not a good use of the waters of the state. And that the priority is public consumption and then agricultural believe it or not, and it's stated there in the code. Now, you can't, it's impossible, virtually impossible, to take somebody's water rights away. But they do ask, and they stated in the code, in their findings, that they ask for communication and cooperation. And so if we go to fully tertiary treated water, I think that the agricultural community will be more apt to provide in lieu of water so we can get potable water back in this community, and that we will probably be able, instead of having the people in the prohibition zone paying for that, it would probably have to be a basin-wide assessment. But it will clearly allow for, if, as soon as it's done, sooner the better. We really have to lobby the county to start now on that. And, of course, the Coastal Commission has made it plain. They want it fully treated tertiary water. And so I think they need to start now, so when that plant goes online, that we'll be able to start putting in the infrastructure for bringing potable water back into this community in lieu of ag exchange. And the sooner the better, because we got a lot of empty properties here that people want to build. And if we have the available water and we can stop pumping as much from the lower aquifer, the better. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Next speaker, please.
Lon Perlman, Prohibition Zone. I'm also a member of LOCAC. And this room is actually arranged very much like LOCAC is. I usually sit on the other side of the table. LOCAC recently had a meeting with Vicky Milaj, a new member on LOCAC. It was a non-Brown Act meeting. We were not talking about issues relating to land use or anything like that. It really helped us out. You as a board have humongous challenges in front of you, and I see that you're working well together, possibly right now, but to really serve this community, you have to really get together as a team. And I'd say, Chairman Sparks, take down that table. Just your arrangement right now is you seem to have a left wing and a right wing. And I'm saying this in jest, of course, but the major point is that the speakers before me have brought up very important issues, and I actually blogged about those issues on Ancal's Holmes blog, these exact issues of seawater intrusion, higher costs for the county, which is not as relevant. But your role within the ISJ is very important. So strategic planning is one way you define that role. It's not directly related to your mission statement, but if you could cohesively take a look at your mission statement at the same time, I think you owe this community the responsibility to be the best CSD that you can be, because, as usual, critical times are upon us, maybe more now than ever. As far as the Coastal Commission, they actually should belong on the draft EIR. They're one of the most important entries to the EIR. The one way to reach it, one way is some people who go to Ann Calhoun's blog or Aaron's blog. I actually posted the links up there. The other way to get to them is you go to the county site, Los Osos Wastewater Project, then you go to Document Library, then you go to draft EIR, and I'm pretty sure that's how I got it, and then you click on that, and about then you'll see a lot of entries, and about halfway down, you'll actually see the actual final EIR. So it's a little hidden that way, and I could be wrong about this. But as far as what the various... So it's very wrong that the Coastal Commission hasn't actually been entered, and I hope they do get entered in the final EIR. All these agencies are basically saying, nice try on the DIR. Now let's work together to get those issues, to work on those issues that you basically did not address. And those are the saltwater intrusion, tertiary treatment. They want tertiary. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Lawson Schaller, Los Osos. Good evening, board and staff. I want to thank you all for your efforts and your commitments that you've made. I try to remember to do that. I'm always impressed with how much work you do and all the material you have to read, so thank you for doing that. And I just want to reiterate some of the previous comments or reinforce them about the need for water conservation. I know that becomes well-worn or trite, but it is very important. And I had a suggestion for the Water Committee. It's probably already been considered. Or perhaps even attempted, but the suggestion would be to have some sort of a board, not necessarily the size of a billboard, maybe a 4x8 sheet of plywood that's painted and shows the progress, I hate that word, that seawater intrusion is made, and probably inappropriate use of the word there, the damage that it is doing right now. And that could be seen by the community. I think there are a lot of people that aren't aware of the seawater intrusion, at least some of the people I speak to. It might be something that the children can see and relate to if there's a color coding that shows how it has advanced, and hopefully we'll get to a point where we can see it halting or perhaps even retreating. So just a suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you. The next speaker, please.
Richard Margetson, on the, I guess it'd be Mr. Cooney's report, there's lists of the dead-end streets, the impassable streets, and that. And maybe, Marshall, you could address this after I'm done. I was under the understanding that there may be a letter coming from the board at some point, and I thought that was going to be talked about tonight, but it's not. And if you could explain what the process is going to be, because after seeing this list, I think it's a bigger problem than we first anticipated. The water utility report, usually I come up here and talk about a concern I have, but this is actually for Rob Miller. The consumption numbers for this report, when you divide them through for this billing cycle, per capita consumption is 59. And so for me, that's important because it's part of the flow analysis computations that we've been working on to prove that the project is oversized. So I know that number of 59 means something to Mr. Miller. And then my last comment is, I'm kind of curious why, it kind of brings back old memories, bad memories, why the sheriff is in the room tonight. Is it because Rob's here to talk about an assessment increase in Cabrillo, or is it the change in the room? Or I'm just curious because the sheriff hasn't been in the room for a long time. And I know at one point we paid to have the sheriff here, and then we paid to have the eyes in the back of the room. I was just, if anybody knew that. Thank you.
I think you'd have to ask the sheriff.
Did you want me to address that?
Yeah, go ahead and address that.
You can all hear me, I'm sure.
Actually, I'm sorry, I'm doing your commission. You'll have to have a microphone.
I can be in the first.
It's not the, we're not doing anything wrong with the seating arrangement, are we?
No, I think it's fine. My name is Brian Beetham. I'm a sergeant with the Sheriff's Department over here in, at the Los Osos Station. And specifically, the reason I'm here is because Commander Ben Hall told me to come tonight. And similar to other public meetings that I go to, I usually have a little presentation that, you know, the Sheriff's Report, a lot of other community groups have that included in the agenda. And I did not see that on this agenda, but I decided to stay for a while. And I haven't been to this community meeting before, so I thought I would see what's going on. And there you have it.
Well, thank you for coming, and we appreciate you being here.
Conspiracy is unmasked.
Yeah, we'll close this probably comment and come back to the board.
Yeah, if I could just respond to Mr. Margetson's question. We will be hopefully having a special meeting of the Advisory Services Committee next week so we can frame a letter to bring to the board next meeting so it can go with our responses to the county for the Planning Commission hearing. That's the intent.
And, oh, Director Kelly.
In response to the previous strategic planning documents, yes, they're quite extensive. They were for 2004 to 2009, and so I would request that the next step that we take is have all those submitted and forwarded to the directors. They cover all the operations of the district.
Director Sennett.
Marshall, I had a question regarding this, the preparation of the list of impassable streets. Is this in regard to the Planning Commission's consideration of the wastewater project? What is the relationship between the paving of the roads and the people of the Prohibition Zone paying for a wastewater project?
Well, and this is what we'll be discussing at the next meeting, but in general, the concept is some of these street ends that could be extended through during construction without a major expenditure of money is something the county should do for us as part of the project as mitigation measures, for the impacts that they're having on emergency services. If you recall back to the previous project, there was a mitigation in there for purchase of a tanker to mitigate the... So this is what we were considering as part of a reasonable mitigation measure that was not expensive relative to significantly improving the emergency services in the community. But that's what we're going to discuss next week. We just asked the chief to prepare the list because I, quite frankly, and I agree with Mr. Margetson, we had no idea of the scope of the issue until we saw the list that he prepared. Now, the fire department had been aware of the list, but I think it puts it in a different context at least than I did, and I believe Chuck would agree with that. So now we'll discuss this next week, and then we will have comments to the county back relative to the project.
Thank you. Mr. Miller, I don't know if Mr. Marcus had a question, but he did comment on the consumption figures. And I guess could you refresh the basis for the consumption figures for the project, and then are we using the and we now have up to date after the rate increase from 2 years ago where we're lower in our consumption?
I'm feeding back just a little bit here, but thank you. President Sparks. Yeah, those numbers reflect a lower per capita consumption and wastewater generation than what the county had reflected, and I think they speak to the same data that we're getting from both the district and Golden State, that water demand has been significantly curtailed from what it was in previous years. And so it's a very encouraging trend. I know one thing that both the commission and several community members are concerned about is perhaps the flow numbers are on the high side. I know the county did some sensitivity analysis to say, hey, if we're 5%, 10% too high, what does that mean to the cost of the project? But I know that this is an ongoing issue that while it might not be a huge cost issue to the project, is important for the commission in terms of growth inducement issues. But they do reflect a lower per capita consumption. We're in the mid-60s, I think, for the last projection of wastewater demand factors that the county projected.
Thank you. Any motions?
Yes. I move that we accept and file the Administrative Committee and Consent Calendar reports.
I'll second that.
Ms. Vega?
Director Kelly?
Yes.
Director Cesena?
Yes.
Director Sennett?
Yes.
Vice President Ohilski?
Yes.
President Sparks?
Yes. Our next item is Agenda Item A, Budget Procedure and Recommendations. And I guess before we start with staff, there's a couple of items. Number one, I guess I want to say this item, it's not, there's some, was some budget numbers in the staff report. This is not a budget review or not approving a budget here today. Second item is the board did receive a March 31st, 2009 letter from SLO-SEA, and it requested the employee-related matters on the agenda be continued to allow for the general manager to meet with SLO-SEA prior to further board discussion. So I don't see there's any downside in honoring that request, And what I'm going to do is propose a motion to continue this item with the instructions to the general manager that to meet with the representatives of SLOSIA related to those specific employee items referenced in the staff report. And I guess I'd ask Mr. Seitz to delineate those specific items. And then prior to considering a second to my motion, I would open the matter for public comment. And then after the public comment, we could have a second and a roll call vote. Mr. Seitz?
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the board, members of the audience, we do have a staff report in here that addresses upcoming budgetary issues. Let me get flipped over to it. Oh, I got it marked up here. Thanks, Mitch. Some of them have to do with inventory. Some of them have to do with staffing, administration, the utility department, management, including the general manager, litigation costs, and general items related to potential issues that will be considered as part of the budgetary process. As you did reflect, we did receive a letter from SLOSIA asking for a continuance on the items as they relate to staffing, particularly with those members that are represented by SLOSIA. And we have staff has no comment one way or the other or objection to the proposed motion. And again, we see no downside in the motion as presented either.
Thank you. Vice President Olhilski.
I just like to clarify what the motion is. If I understand it correctly, you're asking to continue the budget considerations, but if we look at the second page, we are going to go ahead and instruct the general manager to meet and confer with the employees' representatives. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Then I'll go ahead and second the motion.
Well, the request that we you hold off seconding until we have public comment.
That's fine. I just wanted to clarify that was the intent of the motion.
And so I believe that what we're interested in from the public is, since the motion is going to be on the table, is to meet and confer. We'd appreciate your comments on whether you feel the board should meet and confer with SLOSIA. Is any additional staff comment before we take public comment?
No, sir.
With that, we'll go ahead and take public comment.
Richard Margetson, I was at the Finance Committee on Monday, and I was under the assumption that they had already been talked to, and that's why we proceeded with the discussion. I think somebody in the room probably would have asked the question, but we just assumed that the general manager or somebody had already done that. So I think you need to hold off and do the right thing. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
My name is Kim Daniels. I am the general manager of the County Employees Association. I sent you a letter that you have before you and have requested that any issues regarding wages, hours, or working conditions not be discussed and that you not solicit input from the public. The fact that this was discussed at your Finance Advisory Committee and the minutes reflect that the general manager indicated he would proceed to implementation with board approval is appalling. Your employees are covered by an existing memorandum of understanding that does not expire until 2010. I was not contacted. The office was not contacted. I got this by stumbling onto part of it and by being alerted by some of the employees that this was on the agenda for tonight. This is not the way the meet and confer process works. And I don't know if it's arrogance or ignorance, but it cannot continue, and it's not acceptable. We need to get to meet and confer and engage in the process as it's set forth, or you are gift wrapping and handing me an unfair labor practice charge. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Next speaker, please.
Good
Deputy Los Osos, she said it all. Because my understanding of what was going on here was, I mean, does right on the edge of personnel. And those discussions aren't supposed to take place in public. Those are closed session items, I believe. And so you have it, these discussions may, and I wasn't at the Finance Committee meeting, I don't know what the minutes were or what it was really discussed, but if wages were discussed, if specific workers, employees were discussed, it's way out of their purview. So, yeah, put your thinking caps on, take a lesson from this, and meet with these people. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Next speaker, please. Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board. And you want me to repeat the motion?
No, then.
I guess, is there Mr. Seitz or Mr. Cooney, is any comments you want to make?
Maybe I'll just make a real quick comment. And this goes back to some experiences I have in representing other agencies and the thought that the public often has because there's no response from staff or particularly there's no response from legal counsel when litigation has been brought up by a public commenter that my silence so somehow deemed as concurrence. And that issue was actually litigated in a case where somebody had commented on CEQA issues related to an agency that adopted a particular CEQA document and ended up arguing before the court that my silence at a meeting was actually concurrence with the speaker's comment that we were doing something wrong. And so I always feel like when we get to this situation, I need to respond. And I guess my response is I respect what the commenter had to say about potential litigation and all that stuff. I just want to make it clear that my silence on that issue doesn't make or should be construed as any type of concurrence with those type of representations. Having said all that, staff does support the motion.
Thank you.
So I will go ahead and second the motion, but I guess I would like to just ask legal counsel for the district one additional question. In order for the general manager to initiate the meet and confer, that would take an action by this board to direct him to do so. So this is our first opportunity to do that.
And that's correct, and that is part of the motion, as I understand the motion.
Yes, thank you.
And by the way, you know, there was, and I'm sure staff in the board knows this, that this item was placed on the agenda just for that direction. There was no intended action. There was no formal action contemplated by staff related to this item, but to get these issues before the board as part of the upcoming budgetary process and to get that specific direction to meet and confer with SOCIA.
Thank you. Director Kelly. Ms. Vega? Oh, Director Sennett, do you have a question?
Maybe it will stir the hornet's nest a little bit. Is this at all considered to be prejudicial in the way we go forward with negotiations?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay.
Ms. Vega.
Could you clarify the motion?
Oh, the motion was to continue the item with instructions to the general manager to meet with the representatives of SLOSIA related to those employee items referenced in the staff report. And I guess, Mr. Seitz, is there any clarification you want to make on the employee items? Because
the only employee items are those employee items where the potential employees are represented by SLOSIA. I suspect that, and as far as you know, staff is concerned, you know, everything is on the table. If they want to discuss issues that are not on particularly listed on the in the agenda packet, there's other items that need to be discussed. I suspect that we'd be willing to discuss those too.
point of clarification. But at the minimum, we will be covering the issues included or covered under the memorandum of understanding. That's the minimum, and then their additional issues could be added to that.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Seitz.
By the way, just and again, this is sort of tricky stuff, and I know we're swimming in some muddy water. It would be easy to draw a conclusion that there are items that are under the employee sections of this memorandum that are not covered by the memorandum of understanding. But still, the idea of meeting with SLOSIA from a policy perspective, I think staff would support. I just want to make sure that by making this motion that somehow the district is agreeing that every item that is listed on the agenda here is under labor is subject to the MOU.
Ms. Vega?
President Sparks?
Yes.
Vice President Ohilski?
Yes.
Director Kelly?
Yes.
Director Sasania?
Yes.
Director Sennett?
Yes.
The next item is going to be item B, the staff report on the Cabrillo 218 vote from the district engineer and legal discussion by District Counsel John Seitz.
Do you want to start, John?
Yeah, maybe if it's okay with the president, I'll start.
Blue screen is dead.
I've seen that blue screen before.
Blue screen is
okay. Well, we're going to go ahead and take a 5-minute break and then allow them to reboot.
We have some handouts, Mr. President, that appear to be superior to the blue screen of death.
Okay. Okay, we're gonna. Okay, we're gonna talk about Windows DOS here next.
I knew somebody was gonna say that. I knew that.
I have. If it's not enough handouts out in the back, I brought some extra ones up here. So, if you want to look at it,
you're
a handout.
Planning on the blue screen of death, or?
Well, staff's always ready.
Okay, if everybody could get seated, we'll start here.
Mr. President, members of the board and members of the audience, at the last meeting, I was directed to prepare or do legal research related to the issue if a particular zone that provides a particular service is underfunded, what is the district's obligation to provide service within that zone? Another way of saying it is if you are proposing to increase rates commensurate with the district's cost in providing the services, and the homeowners or ratepayers, depending on what mechanism you use, do not support the rate increase pursuant to the procedures of what we commonly call Proposition 218, us lawyers call it Article 13D of the California Constitution. What are the responses, or what can be the district's response? And there is really no case authority on this, but what there is the next best thing, and that is an opinion from the Attorney General of the State of California, who was asked to address this issue related to a particular zone operated by a community service district. And within that zone, the district had the authority and was exercising the authority of snow removal in one of these mountain communities on these streets. And the current charges to provide that snow removal were not adequate. So that district went out to an assessment district to increase the assessments so that they could provide snow removal. And the residents or homeowners, I think it was assessment district, the property owners mounted a majority protest, so the assessment district failed. And the Attorney General reached a conclusion that the obligation, the district's obligation to provide services is commensurate with the obligation or the ability or the willingness of the homeowners within those zones to fund the service. So the short answer is that if an assessment district fails and the district does not have the resources from that particular zone to provide those services, the district can terminate that service. And I just want to make one little quote from the Attorney General's opinion. It says here, terminating the services for lack of funding would fall within the powers and authority of the Board of Directors to manage the district's resources in the best interest of the entire district. And the last two words are, of course, the entire district. So the reality is, if a service is underfunded, then the district is funding it with other district resources. So that's the opinion. The Attorney General's opinion is attached to my memorandum and it's in your agenda packet.
Thank you, Mr. Seitz. And Mr. President, if I could give a brief overview. Tonight, the agenda item is to consider the assessment proceedings that we're conducting for the Cabrillo Estates street lighting. This is something that's been before you several times. Staff has discussed our approach for tonight, and I believe what we're going to recommend to the board is that we focus on the process and then discuss specifically the budget that we're going to be looking at for Cabrillo Estates, but perhaps bring back at your next meeting under consent the actual engineer's report that perfects or is the legal description of that budget. Just to remind everybody, the district serves a subdivision called Cabrillo Estates with a number of different services. Street lighting is one. There's also quite a few drainage facilities up there. There's a drainage retention basin. Tonight we're focusing primarily on the street lighting. However, drainage is going to come into the discussion. I'll cover that in a second. The process that we're following is a Proposition 218 process where we're looking at an assessment on each property. That assessment will be adequate to cover the cost to operate the street lighting system together with some administrative costs over the long term. In addition, there's a cost of living increase, an annual increase that hopefully would prevent the district 10, 20 years from now from being in the position that they're currently in, which is that they're collecting far less from the property owners than it costs to provide the service. As it stands today, each property, and there's about 215 of them, are charged about $8 per year for street lighting, and that doesn't even cover about a quarter of the cost of the PG&E bill. So it's pretty dramatically underfunded, though it still is a very small fund, and therefore that's subsidized with property tax revenue. So we prepared, at the district's direction, an assessment engineer's report. That engineer's report provides the evidence that would allow you to send a mail ballot and a notice to each property owner, advising them of the assessment and asking them to either vote in support or oppose the assessment. And if the number that support the assessment are greater than those that oppose it, then the assessment would stand, and it would be a perpetual assessment that would increase every year in accordance with the CPI. And John will want to address that a little bit more. Go ahead, John.
I wanted to address the last comment, well, what Rob just made while it was fresh in my mind. There is a CPI clause that is included in the notice to the property owners within the Cabrillo Estates. And Rob hit it right on the nose. The idea behind having that CPI clause in there is to address cost of living increases. It's typically called, the CPI stands for Consumer Price Index. And the index is included in the notice, and it's actually included in the ballot itself. But there is a proviso. The board has the discretion to implement the CPI clause each year. It's not automatic. And that's the number one thing that I wanted to present. And the second one is that in relation to the CPI clause would either be adopted in whole or in part or not at all each year, but that would be based on a public hearing duly noticed with the public in general being allowed to comment on any proposed increase, and those residents within Cabrillo Estates in particular would have the ability to comment on any proposed increase in the CPI. So I just want to make sure that if people in Cabrillo Estates are listening tonight, that it's not automatic. I mean, the CPI clause just doesn't kick in each year. And I represent a number of districts where from time the CPI clauses in these assessment districts are not adopted every year. And it's basically a function of how much money is actually in the reserve to address unforeseen circumstances.
Thank you, Mr. Seitz. That's a good clarification. So tonight we're going to look a little bit at the budget for this small assessment district, and we finally were able to pull it up on the screen, although there is a handout that's labeled Part B at the top, and this comes from the assessment engineer's report. There's really two types of functions that we as the assessment engineer would have when it comes to budgeting. The first is to compile those budget items that are typical for the district for this fund, and several of these you've seen in previous fiscal years, and I brought some of the older budgets for comparison, and also those that we had some input to in terms of future costs. But just so folks know, there's no estimate, engineer's estimate of a construction project. This is just the ongoing operation and maintenance of this street lighting function. Also wanted to note that while there are drainage facilities that the district is responsible for in Cabrillo Estates, those are managed and will be managed going forward by the drainage fund, your Fund 800. So the basin and the maintenance of that basin is a separate matter under a different fund. This relates to street lighting. So walking through the different budget line items, I'd like to perhaps start at the bottom and work my way up. The most obvious one, of course, is the cost of the streetlights themselves, the utility cost. That covers both the power and the maintenance of the streetlights since they're owned by PG&E. That's a $6,600. So as I noted, the current income to this fund doesn't even come close to covering that expense. Also, there are some administrative and operating expenses that are shown here, and those cover primarily internal to the district, the accounting functions. But in terms of operating this fund, there's also an annual report that is prepared and submitted to the auditor's office to actually collect the money. And you typically get a consultant to do that. We've been doing it the past number of years. We do all your funds for, I think, $5,000 or $6,000. This one probably amounts to maybe $500 of that, $500-$600. It's a small charge. There's some legal work that goes along with that. There's a resolution that's prepared every year. And then also the county charges a $2 per parcel fee just to collect anything. So you were collecting $8 per parcel before, and they're charging $2, and you know, so they were taking 25% of your income just to collect. So this, of course, would be a better picture once that's done. So there's a number of minor operating expenses that go into those two line items. In terms of grounds maintenance, very minimal, as you can see, from a very nominal amount. Weed abatement around the streetlights and that sort of thing, very nominal. Historically, on previous budget years, the district has allocated a portion of benefits and the district cell phone system for utility personnel to each and every fund, and these are consistent with some of the historical budgeted line items for benefits and communication. One thing that I did notice, and I know there's been some question, is why is there a zero under payroll? And that zero actually has shown up in previous budget years in the actual column, where there's just been no staff time logged to this because they're just doing street lighting. All the physical staff time associated with weed abatement and with the accounting function are rolled into these other line item entries, but the actual admin time spent on this fund is very minimal, and therefore there was no specific payroll allocation, though there is certainly some labor associated with those other items. And again, the tax roll and the legal work are all contracted services. So I know there may be some discussion on that point, but that's consistent with previous budget models. So going down to the bottom line, we're looking to collect about $10,300 split among the 215 parcels. You're looking at about $48 per parcel. And so still, you know, it's $4 a month for street lighting, and it's still a pretty nominal charge. And 60% of that is just the streetlights themselves. And so hopefully folks who receive this information will realize it's they're getting a pretty good deal, and that if they choose not to support the assessment, then that function could simply go away and the streetlights could be deactivated. But I know John spoke to that earlier. We could turn off the lights as a demonstration. But so those are the basic budget line items, and John may want to augment this process discussion that I'm going to go through here. But tonight, you really staff was recommending that perhaps you discuss the budget, and if you have comments, that we have a chance to incorporate those so that we can bring what we're calling a preliminary engineer's report back to you that incorporates your comments if you have any tonight. If you have no comments and feel comfortable with it, we have produced a preliminary engineer's report that could be used for the Prop 218 proceedings. And we do have extra copies of a notice that would go out to all the property owners, and that's on the back table. It's listed Notice of Public Hearing and Assessment Ballot Procedures for Cabrillo Estates, and there's more on the back table. I'd like to thank John for going through this and I think really bolstering the notice a little bit more than what was in the staff report, giving the folks who receive it a little more background as to why we're doing this. And I think the final notice reads very well. And you have that on your dais as well. So tonight, again, you can either make comments or go ahead and approve the preliminary engineer's report as submitted, and we can move forward with the ballots. The next step is either we bring this back to your next meeting, probably on consent, incorporating your comments, or even if you approve it tonight, we would set a public hearing for the 4th of June. That's at least 45 days from the date that we mail the ballots. During that June meeting, we'll have all the ballots returned, only, you know, a few hundred ballots. We'll be able to, at that time, open the ballots, count them, and determine whether there's a majority protest, which would prevent you from levying the assessment. If not, you can go forward to close the public hearing and then direct staff to tabulate the ballots formally. We'd publish the results, and we'd adopt a resolution to levy the special tax going forward. So that's sort of the process discussion. So tonight you can either make comments, discuss the budget, and we can bring it back revised, or you know, we can move forward for the approval of the entire preliminary engineer's report. We are trying to do this process expeditiously so that by June 30 we can present a draft roll to the auditor with all these charges and make sure that we catch this as part of the next tax cycle. And June 30 is typically when we submit that draft roll. So we've worked back from that. And that concludes my thoughts. John, I don't know if you had any further thoughts. I'd be happy to entertain questions.
Director Sanit?
Yes, Rob, I've heard some discussion about the new lights that are, as the old ones burn out, they're being replaced, and someone said that they're less efficient and that that would increase our future energy costs. Is that anything you've heard of or come across?
I haven't heard that PG&E is actually replacing existing sodium bulbs with less efficient ones. I'd be surprising. I'd be very interested in that information, since we, of course, we have maybe a little bit of contingency there for increased electrical costs in the fund, but wholesale increases, I think, would significantly increase the cost.
Mr. Mueller, on the other funds, we typically will have a transfer to admin, and there's no component of that in here. And can you? I know this is a very small portion of our budget, but there's a minimum overhead associated with any fund that's probably not proportional. It's something greater than that. So to include that, is it just that it's not worth it, or it would require a separate action by the board to establish that?
I'll let Mitch follow up on my comments if need be, but I know that there, of course, is some spreading of benefit costs, but a specific allocation to admin hadn't historically been made in that fund, perhaps because it was so small and the actual real administrative time so nominal that folks had decided it wasn't worth a formal allocation. I guess you could make a nominal one. You could certainly do that as part of your budget process, but we really tried to look at what actually occurs as part of the district's function in running this fund, and really most of those services are either minor grounds maintenance or consulted out services. So it's historically not been allocated specifically to the fund.
Mr. Cooney?
The budget as presented is a compilation by our district engineer on actually adopted budgets by the district. So, I mean, these are actual facts, how the district has previously adopted their budgets.
Your board would certainly have the discretion to change that, but that's...
Yeah, but that's how this is compiled. I mean, you're just taking the old budget data and putting it together. It'll change in the future, but...
Again, there is some light items for some admin time and labor associated with just the accounting function. Again, you're just paying one check to PG&E. It's a very, very minimal function. So I know it's difficult to conceptualize for a small fund how it would really get a real hit on admin, but we think we've captured those real costs that will actually be incurred in the course of a year. But, of course, staff's open to discussion.
Vice President Hilsky.
I just had a quick comment and a question. I appreciate Mr. Seitz's response to my question about the legal implications of cutting off services, because that was a question that we asked last meeting, so I appreciate the response. I do have a question about the numbers, though, and I guess this is, being a relatively new director, I need to understand the process here. But these monies will be collected by the county and then reimbursed to, or sent to the district. Does the county not take an overhead charge on top of this?
Oh, yeah.
And should that not be included in this?
It is. It was, and I may have gone over it too fast, but it's $2 per parcel, so about $450 a year is their share, and that's included in the operating expenses.
Oh, and that was for collection. Okay.
That's all they get. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, with that, we'll go ahead and open it for public comment.
Well, first of all, disclaimer, I live up in Cabrillo, and I appreciate the fact that this budget has been somewhat explained, but I also bring a lot of baggage to this since, as you know, I served on the Financial Advisory Committee for some years. And it was always an annoying thing that all this money was being collected up in Cabrillo by the county, and we got zip out of it. And I continue to be bothered by it. And I see this as a problem in trying to convince the folks up there to vote for this. Now, Joe, at the last meeting, you made a comment somewhat off camera, but it got caught. At least I caught it the next day when I happened to turn on the tube, and there you were saying that the folks up there don't pay for anything, and that's true. They don't. They don't. The money does not come back to this district. And it seems to me that it's important to find out why. And it isn't because they voted not to finance the CSD. It's because the county arranged all this. And it seems to me somewhere, basically, we've got to get back, and, you know, this may be somewhat off subject, but you've got to address that question. Also, I'm concerned about the... I looked over the list of folks, and I wonder, this is a question for Rob, what happens if there's a mistake in this? Because there is one. At least I found one, and I'll talk to you about it and tell you which one it is. Does this do anything to disrupt the procedure? I assume that everybody who's a property owner up there is entitled to notice. And if we have mistakes, you know, that would not be a good thing. And last but not least, there's a lot of rumors go around, particularly about Cabrillo. And if you haven't heard this one, and I'm told it's a pretty good rumor, Cabrillo isn't in the prohibition zone because somebody lived up in Cabrillo who was involved in drawing the prohibition zone.
Thank you for your comment. Next speaker, please.
Martha Golden, same disclaimer. Our residence is, excuse me, in Cabrillo. I want to thank Mr. Seitz for the legal opinion. I do have a question about that, and I think that the property owners in Cabrillo may be persuaded one way or another, depending on exactly what the legal response is. I read the AG's opinion, and as you know, it's in two parts. The first part addresses the section about what if there's no money, what can the district do, and they can just terminate the zone, or in our case, the special assessment district that is the lighting district, and it's fine with me. But the other part of it addresses whether or not there is an obligation, and that one was kind of specific to the undedicated streets that the county had always been, or whatever the entity was always taking care of and clearing the snow. And I know absolutely nothing about obligations with respect to lighting districts, and I thought we should be very clear as to what could happen. Will the CSD have an obligation to provide lighting because they have been providing lighting in Cabrillo, or is that like, and you don't have to answer that now, but I think it's something that the voters up there are going to want to feel yay or nay about whether they lose their lighting. And the other thing is sort of a follow-up on what Lee was mentioning about revenues. Now, when the money comes, the general tax funds come from the county to the CSD, there is an allocation, and that allocation was made, I don't know, I think CSA 9 had it, and then the CSD had it, and then you sort of talked about abolishing the allocation, just getting a lump sum and dividing it up whatever way you needed to for all the services. But the fact of the matter is that if you look at this, and this has nothing to do with the residents of Cabrillo, and it has nothing to do with the special assessment, $17,765 appears to be what is allocated from the general tax revenues to Cabrillo. Now, on account of Cabrillo. Now, three of the residences in Cabrillo pay that much in total taxes. There's something wrong with this picture, but it's not Cabrillo's fault. It is the county's and needs investigation. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Next speaker, please.
David Los Osos, and I'm glad that we got that opinion from the Attorney General's office. But really what it amounts to is, do you want the safety and security of those lights? Or do you want to have, first of all, perhaps a deer run out in front of your car when you're coming up and down those hills without those lights? That's one thing. Or intruders on the property. Those lights provide security. And I believe that if the people up there realize that, was it $4 a month for that much more security compared to having none of that security, that perhaps everybody on the block will then start putting these high wattage lights that come on and stay on bright whenever there's movement, like a raccoon or a deer, and pretty soon you have a huge amount of light pollution up there, beaming into your bedrooms and into your living rooms from the neighbor next door across the street. So I would encourage them, well, first of all, I would say that go ahead and adopt whatever you're going to be adopting tonight. I don't think there's too much to be said about this, other than I would encourage them to consider the fact that $4 a month, $47 and some change a year is a lot less to pay if something else happens if you don't have that lighting, and it's not going to be the district's fault. It's up to the people up there to realize that they're paying for their safety and their security. Those lights aren't up there for decor. We all know that. So, thank you.
Thank you for your comment. The next speaker, please.
Richard Margetson. This first question is for Rob, and it might save some time. Are all 217 parcels up there required to pay this assessment? Is there anybody that's exempt?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Well, then I think the budget is wrong, because if you take 217 times 4791, you're a couple dollars short of 10,400 instead of 10,300. I think that needs to be adjusted. My concern, I'm going to speak to the budget. I don't know how you cannot have some cost delegated to personnel for this. You know, all of the funds costs are in their own funds, or that's what we try to do. And to now say that there's no personnel cost to this fund, just preparing the budget each year, even though it takes very little time, just to print these, just to have this discussion, just to have staff here, you know, irrespective of Mr. Seitz and Mr. Miller's costs that are in the two line items that are already discussed. And the benefits line item for this new budget is $900. In last year's budget, the line item for benefits for all personnel was $805, and that's when part of drainage was incorporated into this fund balance, or this fund cost. I don't know how that goes up when you're taking a component out. Same with the communications. It was 200 last year. It's going to stay at 200, and we know that most of that communication charge is dealing with George's employees in the water department being up there dealing with drainage issues and weed abatement, things like that. I don't think you can go forward without that. And the comment that there's been no administrative draw from this fund, at least half of the years that the district was in existence, there was a minor administrative draw from this fund to the administration account, the Buell years, I guess we would call them. There was an administrative draw. It was minor, but there was a draw from this fund to administration. I think those things at least need to be addressed before you, you know, get behind the eight ball again down the road and another fund ends up compensating for this one. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment.
Along Perlman, and I live in Los Osos, but not in Cabrillo Estates. Sinking businesses need to recover their costs, and part of the situation, both the people in Cabrillo Estates, who have no responsibility for how they ended up being balkanized away from the other function, they probably already understand, because this has come before you previously, that you won't be able to backtrack and recover differences between what was charged in previous years and this time. You will not recover those costs. So essentially, the people in Cabrillo Set happen to have received a retroactive benefit, and the benefit being that they haven't actually paid what the costs are. You are actually collecting, even through the 218, by a budget estimate, not by your actual costs. And I don't know if it's legal or whether it can be done, but I think the cost index that's the most real would not be the CPI, but some energy cost index, because that's actually what or a portion of that bill is going to be, and that energy could go up. I very much hope that it was a rumor that PG&E are using brighter, more energy-consumptive lights for two reasons. One is that it will give you a higher usage, a higher wattage usage, and therefore a much higher cost in the long term, again, multiplied by that whatever energy cost index is different from the regular index. I'm also concerned about light pollution. If it is true that they're putting brighter lights and it may be due to some kind of regulation, then that interrupts a view of the night sky. So hopefully that rumor is researched and dispelled or acted on. I hope the people of Cabrillo Estates understand that there is an administrative cost. The very fact that I'm speaking before you right now occupies council site's time, and that cannot be paid for by other elements of the district. So go ahead and make sure your calculations are correct, and go ahead with it and get it off the table. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Any additional speakers? Seeing none, we'll bring back the board. Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just some very good comments from the public. Appreciated. Mr. Golden did come up and point out one of the parcels on the roll that he believes the owner name had changed. That's a fairly typical occurrence in these things. We use the latest roll that we have from the tax assessors, and then every March we request their last equalized roll, and we did make that request this March also. And we're awaiting that. Usually it takes them a week or two to get it. So when the actual ballots go out, if we have more current owner information, it will be reflected in the printed ballots. But we are at the mercy of the county's process in getting that information. I probably didn't answer Richard's question correctly. We have 215 parcels within the boundary of what's historically been, since the district took the fund over, those properties which are, quote, benefiting from the street lighting. Perhaps he's looking at the 217 parcels in the total tract, but 215 are the ones that have been historically in the boundary, and I thought you were talking about in the boundary, but it is 215. And then understood about the admin charge. I was actually looking at the 07-08 budget, and we did confer with staff, and it was felt that on the salary column, we were going to zero that one out as it was in the actual expenditures in 07-08. But I do know that in some previous years there was some time coded to that line item, and certainly staff's open to other discussions. Again, as far as the real time spent, we've tried to include some portion of that actual time spent. I do understand that folks are perhaps looking at this as being one component of an overall district service, your board meetings and everything else, and therefore worthy of an admin charge. And that's one of the reasons why staff was open to bringing this back on, on your next meeting after making some changes, and why we wanted to highlight this for you tonight. So that concludes my thoughts.
Any questions from the board? I do have a couple of questions, Mr. Miller. Number one, when it comes back for the counting of the ballots, that will be done. Who will be doing that?
Be done right here.
Okay, it'll be done at the meeting. Number two, going back to the admin, what I want to support is that we do add on an admin transfer. I mean, when we look at drainage as an example, for $100,000, that's a special assessment. For $100,000, we've gone as much as $40,000 transfer to admin. And so, you know, proportionally, that would be a $4,000 charge here. If we look at the data recently from the water utilities, you know, anywhere from 1.5 to 1.7 million budget, the transfers have been $250,000 to almost $500,000. So certainly it seems reasonable to me a 20 to 25% allocation that we could set here. If we could set it here, I don't know if it needs to be a percentage or an exact amount. And then by doing so, it would then obviously, when Mitch does his admin allocations, he comes back for the board approval of those, that's going to be the amount that he uses. But if we approve this as is here, he's going to be stuck using a zero allocation for Cabrillo if by doing what we're doing here. He'll never be able to allocate admin.
Mr. President, I think that's correct, unless he wanted to continue subsidizing it through property taxes as it has historically been. You could always allocate some property taxes to the fund, but I agree if it seems prudent to allocate some admin to this fund, that tonight would be the place to do it, and the engineer's report would be the place to put it. And
I do have some I just did some quick calculations here, and I come out with about $1,500, $1,516 for staff time as far as a direct allocation, and $1,250 for overall overhead allocation to administration.
And so,
at $1,200 to that, because $1,500 is already up there.
Okay. Then $1,250 would be the number.
And that would be 10, 12, 11%.
Right.
Yeah.
And I realize, you know, that's 12%. And again, you know, looking at historically what the other funds are getting tagged with, they are at a higher percentage at that. And so I'm willing to entertain, I think, up to 20%. And should that be a fixed amount, or would that be as a percentage?
Either way, it's fine with staff. To have some basis by percentage would probably be helpful in the report, just to explain what the origin is.
I'd be interested in hearing comments from the other directors on including the admin transfer allocation.
Excuse me. I think it's a little dangerous to use the past couple years' precedent and transfers to admin to base the future on. Hopefully, we're not going to go through another 3 or 4 years like we have been with huge transfers for legal costs, that kind of thing. So maybe the 15% range would be more appropriate.
That's a good point.
I agree with Chuck.
Any other director comments or questions?
This is a question regarding the current property tax revenues that we receive. Is the LOCSD Zone D, is this Cabrillo Estates, the $17,492?
Yes.
Can I? Where does that $17,492?
I'm sorry, pardon?
$17,492. Is Zone D Cabrillo? Yes?
Yeah, Zone D is Cabrillo, and it's $1,760.
Okay.
or $36.
I won't argue over $12 or $6. I just want to know where those funds currently go.
Can I just make a quick comment on this? I know that this is technical, and these terms have changed over the years because of Prop 218, and words that are used to be common for saying assessments, property taxes. If you went back pre-Prop 218, particularly pre-Prop 13, they would have a completely different meaning. Right. So what I want to just comment on, when you look at the $1,700 that is actually being paid.
$17,000.
Well, I'm talking about street lighting.
Oh, okay.
The street lighting budget. That is not a function of property taxes. That was a rate that was adopted by the county prior to the district formation and has never been changed since the district was formed.
I understand that.
That's a charge under modern, today's legal framework of discussing these things. That would be a charge. Property taxes, the buzzword is an ad valorem property tax. And that goes back to Prop 13, where there was the 1% of the property taxes. And there's a clause in there. This might explain Leon's why some people are paying more property taxes than others, because the only time that you can really jump your property taxes is on the sale. So it is really possible to have a next-door neighbor paying a ton more property taxes than you are, depending if you bought the property pre-Prop 13 or not. So that's pretty uncommon. There are property tax allocations to the district. And the way the county had, again, I'm trying to put this puzzle together, too, so I think I'm 80% correct, so I don't want to tell you I'm the 100% solution here. But the way I view this is the county did collect property taxes, and we are allocated property taxes. I think Mitch in the last agenda item is going to go through this. Mm-hmm. But the way the county had the district had this thing set up when it was CSA 9 is they even allocated their property taxes not by the total district boundaries, but they did it by zones, because that's how CSA 9 was formed. You had Zone 9D for Cabrillo Estates. I think you had Zone 9B for fire. You had Zone 9J for drainage. Zone 9D for Cabrillo Estates, for example, had a charge not only for street lighting, which was $8 per year, they have a $16 per year charge, not property taxes, for drainage. And they, of course, are subject to the special taxes and stuff charges, which is a special tax for fire. But those were all allocated through Zone 9D. And then if you go to the water district, you're going to see a different set up there for between charges and property taxes, because the county, as I view it, didn't have a unified body under Zone 9 to say this is all the property taxes that are going to be collected and charged. They did it by zones. So when we were dealt this hand, it wasn't a clear-cut, poker hand. I mean, you looked at a 5 and maybe a 4.5. I mean, it was difficult to put together, much less bet it. So when you take a look at this, your ad valorem property taxes is a function of Prop 13. If you are contributing taxes to the district, it doesn't mean your property taxes went up because you're making some of your property taxes are going to the district. If the district wasn't collecting that percentage of your property taxes, it would be going to the county. So I want to make sure everybody that looks at their property taxes and says, the last thought I would want them to have is that I am paying more property taxes than I normally would be paying, because some of it's going to the district. That's just simply not the case. You have a ceiling under Prop 13. Everybody has the same ceiling. And what happens is what that what that ceiling is allocated to the district. If it wasn't allocated to the district, it would be allocated to the county. Those are the two choices. So when we talk about property taxes and services, it's two different things.
No, and I appreciate the distinction. But my question was the
That's the 20%.
Exactly. That's the 20%.
We got to add another $500 to this. I'm still going to ask the question. On the property tax revenue estimates for the district from 2008-2009, it shows estimated revenue for Zone D of $17,492. All I'm asking is how was that $17,942 allocated?
That's all
I want to know.
I can give you the sheets.
I know we're going to look at allocations in the future.
I give you the sheets for Cabrillo.
Okay.
Yeah, this
well, is all not. I'm asking is how much right now out of that $17,492 are we allocating for, I assume it's drainage and lighting. Is that the only two that we provide?
No, we have.
Fire is separate, correct?
In Cabrillo, we collect money for, just a minute here.
Because fire is district-wide, so I'm assuming D is only drainage and lighting?
No, it's we got lighting, fire, and drainage.
Is all D?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. That's all I wanted to know.
Do you want to know the totals or no?
No, I don't. Okay. I've got it here, but I was just wanted to make sure that was whether fire was on top of that or included within that.
It's included.
Okay, thank you.
No, let me just see if I can really confuse you. There are property taxes that part of the ad valorem property taxes that traditionally goes towards fire. In top of that ad valorem property tax that under zone 9B, is that fire? I'm trying to remember all these zones. That the county, when we took over, they had under their policies, they contributed, I think it was $1 million something of the general property taxes to fire. In addition to that, the district has adopted a special tax for fire that I think is somewhere around $500,000 in addition to the typical ad valorem property tax that goes to fire. Yeah. I know Richard's ready to tell me that I'm all wrong here.
Well, I guess where I'm trying to go with this, and maybe we're not getting there on a direct path, but this has been very educational. We're going to go ahead and ask for this 218 to be approved. Okay. We're getting X dollars now of property tax revenues that is being used for the lighting district. Does that reduce this number?
Okay. Any questions, or does anyone want to take a? I'll take a stab at a motion if we're ready. And before I do, again, I'll just make the comment. You know, in looking at the budgets, this motion, I'm going to include a 20% administrative transfer, and it's again in. I know historically, it's been higher the last 2 years. But if you look at what the other funds are paying, even after we're going to make budget adjustments, it's still going to be reasonable and within the normal range of what you're going to see the other funds pay. So with that, I'll make the motion to approve the preliminary engineer's report as amended with a 20% administrative transfer.
I've just been... enlightened by extra special public comment that only the lawyer, I guess, gets to hear. So, but it was a great point, and I appreciate it being made to me. You know, the idea of a percentage allocation is very difficult under Prop 218. You know, saying 10%, 15%, 20%, 30%. Because you're supposed to have, you know, some type of benefit analysis that goes along with it. So I think what I would suggest that you do, since this is coming back, is to have Mitch actually do a calculation of the administrative cost that should be associated with this and plug that number in as opposed to a number or a percentage so that you have something upon which to apportion the special benefit. Otherwise, I think you're playing with a little bit of you're creating an issue.
Okay, so I'll amend my motion to approve the preliminary engineer's report as amended by staff's and include staff's administrative transfer.
Don't we just want to give staff direction to have them bring it back on the consent next agenda?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think what you want to do is direct staff to calculate. To direct staff to calculate the administrative charge and to include it in and have the engineer include it in the engineer's report for the board's preliminary approval at the next meeting.
I'll withdraw the motion. Director Sennett.
Yeah, Rob, can we check with PG&E to see if they have any cost adjustments on the horizon, just to make sure that these are going to be consistent or constant, reasonably constant for the near future?
Absolutely.
I'd like to include that in the direction to staff.
Are you moving the recommendation in the staff report? Is that what you're moving?
I was just adding, amending to it.
Well, there is no...
There's no motion there's right no, now.
Well, they're going to bring it back, but as direction to staff, when they bring it back to include that that task, to contact PG&E and just get a verification that there aren't any new costs on the horizon.
I think what Marshall was suggesting that you just wrap that all into a
correct
motion.
Yeah.
Okay. Could we ask either the general manager or the district council to read the motion so we can?
I
don't think we have.
I think the motion is to preliminary approve the engineer's estimates with the proviso that staff calculate the true administrative charge and present it to the board as part of the final engineer's report, and to address and have the assessment engineer contact, I guess it's PG&E, to see if there are any significant rate increases in the near horizon. Did I get that all right?
That was the exact motion I had in mind, so I'll move that.
Oh, you just wanted the credit.
I'll second.
You're not going to amend it to add $20 to Mitch's numbers?
I've failed on two.
The board is aware. Because of the action taken tonight, we're bringing this back for approval. We will actually be pushing the 45-day notice further down the line, and the actual final, the assessment ballots will be due in your second meeting in June, as opposed to your first meeting in June. So everything is going to be set back 2 weeks.
Thank you. So that will go to agenda item 5C, which is the property tax allocation. And we'll start off with staff report by Mr. Cooney.
Okay, before you is a chart of the tax dollar allocation as they flow into the district. In years past, these monies have been handled in many different ways. And what I am trying to establish here is a consistency that if the money is coming into the district for a specific purpose, that the money be allocated for that purpose.
and so that we know from year to year exactly where the revenue is derived from. In the past, one time all of the tax dollars were placed in the admin fund, and then they were spread out to the other funds. It's very difficult to follow the dollar amount when you do it in that way. So what I'm recommending, recommending is that we create a consistency and adopt the recommendation that the tax dollars, as they flow to the district for specific purposes, be allocated to those purposes.
I would just make one quick comment on that. What you're essentially doing is adopting the county's allocation of property taxes, just so that it's clear that that's what you're doing. And you do have some discretion with that, but I just wanted to make for
Mr. Seitz, it's also correct that we can come back, say, next year and revisit that, those allocations.
Yes. I just want to make sure, again, I'm being an economist and I'm way out of my bailiwick, but the district does have some discretion regardless of how the county allocated property taxes. The district retains some discretion to allocate property taxes as a policy issue, and you're not necessarily tied to the county's allocation. Having said all that, the real key issue regarding property taxes is protecting it from state raids, commonly known as ERAF shifts. You know, we don't believe that we are going to see more ERAF shifts, but we thought that 3 years ago, and we thought it 6 years ago, and there's actually legislation that's supposed to prevent it, although there was an opinion that our property taxes were vulnerable to the next ERAF shift as much as 6 months ago. The key issue with property taxes is there's one safe harbor for property taxes as under current state policy, and that is fire departments is a safe harbor to put property taxes, because those property, so far the state has adopted pretty strong policies, or the Special Districts Association has adopted pretty strong policies along with other governmental agencies, that property taxes allocated to health and safety functions, typically police departments and fire departments, are protected from these ERAF shifts. Or any other, right now they're called ERAF shifts. It could be a different shift sometime, a different name. So that's my only comment. But what? Again, you do retain discretion and, you know, related to them.
Yeah, one other question, Mr. Seitz. It came up, Mr. Markinson, in the Finance Committee meeting, and that is the fact that as a government fund, the Water Fund 500 is an enterprise fund, and so the fact that there's this legacy allocation of property tax to the water, there's no concern of a commingling of a government fund, government revenues with an enterprise fund.
Well, you're using that word commingle loosely. So, you know, if you use it in that comment, I mean, hopefully that you have an accounting system that's good enough that you can untangle the commingling, you know. But, no, there is
Golden State's jurisdiction.
Right, and the reality of it is that you're not adversely impacted by that either.
Well, my property taxes could be used for other things that do benefit me.
That part.
So
that
I am
part
losing.
Is true, but
I am losing.
I'm not. I'm not arguing that point.
Actually, not just me. There are many of us in this community.
Okay, we'll go ahead and take public comment. Anyone wishing to speak?
Let me make one more question, comment. What I don't know, and I want to make sure, it's I always confuse people. I say what I don't know. What I don't know is whether or not the property taxes that are the county has typically allocated to the water function are derived at any other place other than the water. See, that's what we don't know. we collect property taxes as part of the ad valorem. What we don't know is that a constant percentage district wide, and that's again where I went back to the zones because it was collected by zones. Is there a separate property tax allocation from each zone that was operated by the county as a CSA? And that's the question that we don't know the answer to.
Okay, we'll go ahead and take public comment. Mr. Golden?
I'm unsure as to whether to raise this at this time, but I'll try, see if it works. You know, you got another couple of problems in the district. There's places where there are pocket sewers, which have for years not had enough money to operate. And I realize that the county is moving or dashing or whatever towards solving the problem, but it's not going to happen right away. And it seems to me that in talking about allocations, and again, I know, John, that we get into this whole business of the property tax versus the special use tax, I think it is, it's called. But I urge you in dealing with this, think of Vista de Oro, and I believe it's Bayview, is it? Yeah. Both of which have a collection base in there that needs to be serviced. And as I recall, when I last looked at the budget, the money that's being collected is insufficient.
Thank you for your comment. Any additional speakers?
Before you start my time, which the handout on the back table are we discussing? Are we discussing
the tax dollar allocation?
No, there's two different.
Well, I did a little more for. I did a little. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right.
Okay. That's Richard Margetson. I was concerned that there was the one on the back of the staff report because that's, I guess, been amended. But there's nothing on here saying it was amended. So, I guess my first comment is the Cabrillo number, if Rob, that's the reason I asked the question on the last item, if the number is correct that Rob says we're only collecting from 215, then the in Cabrillo, then the 1736 is wrong because that represents the collection from 217 parcels. Times 217 times 8 comes up with that number. Minor, but as we're going forward. And, you know, I still have a problem, and I think Mr. Seitz is kind of given direction to find out where that tax revenue for the water department is coming from. Because if it's coming from the entire district, it's not coming from a definite zone, then an enterprise fund, I think, comes under a different category. And he's probably going to argue with me about it, but I think the theory is that how can an enterprise fund receive property tax revenue from another part of a district that isn't receiving water from the CSD, but is receiving tax revenue from the entire district to help supplement the water department. And this revenue does not show up, this $188,000 does not show up directly in the water, the property taxes of everyone. So that, you know, that's another issue. My time's up. I actually wanted to address Marshall's question about the $17,000, but I can talk to you about that later.
Thank you for your comment. Any additional public comment? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board. Director Cicina.
I would like to know, is how big a deal this will be to maybe to dig into the property tax. If it's only coming from those zones within the district that are within the water department, then fine, I've got no gripe.
Okay. Fortunately, we will be meeting with the Special District Association. We'll be meeting with Mr. Seebach, and hopefully we can bring back an explanation to it. But I've heard the explanation in the past, and it is so complicated that I can only remember the first three parts of it, and there's 12 parts to it. So I will take special notes on property tax allocations under county policy. But I'm not being critical of the policy. I'm just saying it's a complicated policy, and it will be hard for a lawyer. So I'm hoping that Mitch, as a CPA, will attend that meeting, and he will actually make the presentation.
Director Kelly?
The County of San Luis Obispo property tax revenue estimates for fiscal year 2008-2009 by zone. And it has secured, unsecured, and homeowners. And I don't know how else to interpret homeowners than it says homeowners for Zone A, which is the water, is 1,595. And I don't know if that means anything. But it doesn't sound like it goes across the district. So I'm going to be very curious, too, because I was always under the assumption what I'd found is that it was definitely by the water department that the county had established.
I think as a follow-up to Chuck's question, and Maria and I have both been referring to this, I think a clarification as to what is and not included in each zone would be helpful at this point. A definition of what the zones are, at least so we can understand that.
Mr. Seitz, a question, and I think on the water fund, the admin fund is a government fund. Is that correct? The administrative fund 100 is considered a government fund? Or either one of
you? You got me. I'm not sure what you're...
I've never heard of a government fund, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, we talk about enterprise fund and government funds.
No.
And so the Fund 100, is that an enterprise fund?
No.
Okay. So we also, conversely, we transfer from water to admin, which is for the whole district, and when we make our administrative allocations.
Yes.
So that way it works. My point is that in the end, we're going to make a policy recommendation here, and we could put this all in fire and make it simple. But we're also going, Mitch is going to come back with an allocation for admin, and I believe he's going to take into account, the amount that goes from the property tax revenue to the different funds. So as an example, if the water transfer was $488,000 and it had received this revenue, essentially when you zero it out, it's a $300,000 contribution from the water fund to the admin. If you start out, it just depends on how you do the math.
And it also depends on the policy perspective, the policies that the board adopts. Think of it from a different perspective. If the board says, because remember, your property taxes don't go up and down. Your property taxes are what they are, no matter how the district spends the money. It's not, you're not being taxed more, you're not paying more property taxes because you're in a particular zone. It's just how the county allocated those property taxes under the CSA policies of Zone 9 back in basically the 70s and the 80s. So you have policy issues that you can address on how you want to allocate property taxes. It's probably one of the few revenues where you do have some discretion as to how they are allocated. So sort of keep in mind, the only policy that has really been consistent about property taxes and the policies of allocating them is that
property taxes collectively going to fund 500, and the same thing for Bay Ridge. We, as a way of creating that equity, we could simply transfer those two amounts to fund 100 to on this tax allocation. And then
the problem, I'm sorry, I'm losing my voice. The problem with that is that's how you've dealt with it at least last year. And you really don't know what you've got. If you start it all in one place and then you allocate it out based on percentages to both overhead and labor costs, then you can track through your budget exactly what everything's costing you, how much revenue you're getting. If you do, as you're suggesting, take some of it and put it in admin and then spread it out from admin, you start losing track of it. It took me a long time to figure out where these tax dollars were because I spent probably 2 weeks under the misconception that fire only got $1,400,000. The reason for that was that was the number that was actually transferred to fire in the last budget, where the $1,600,000 started off in admin, and they kept $200,000 of it and just moved $1,400,000. And it's very difficult to track your numbers if you don't put them all together. I mean, if you spread them out like that, it's very difficult to see where your revenue and your expenditures are coming from.
I agree. That's why what I was referring to would be just allocating it to two funds, the fire fund directly corresponding to the legacy from the county and the rest in Fund 100. Because in the end, that's what's gonna happen. So
I have a question. To me, that seems incredibly confusing when you're trying to identify what the monies were collected for. I mean, these are for specifically even the drainage. People voted to assess themselves for those funds and to put them into Fund 100 and then send them back out. That doesn't make sense.
That's what I'm not talking about.
I thought you were saying you're just sticking all of it into funds.
No. I don't think we have any discretion on the Cabrillo, Bay Ridge, Vista, Fire, and Drainage.
I apologize, Joe. I thought you were talking about lumping it and splitting it into two.
The only items of discretion, and I guess we didn't make this clear, we did in the committee meeting. The only items of discretion is that top line. That's the only discretionary items. We really don't have any discretion on the lower items.
Okay.
And the point of contention has always been particularly the water, because it's collectively paid throughout the district and because the county assigned it to the water fund years ago. That's why it shows up on the tax rolls.
I think that water's left over from before the district was developed to the extent that it's been developed. I think that's the old, for the maintenance of the original infrastructure, which was probably pre any of the other development. I don't know where else it would have come from. That was when I was asking my questions.
That is true. It's part of the original CSA 9. I think all I'm trying to do is to create a policy that gives you a better audit trail of where the money comes and goes.
I don't have a problem.
I have personally no problem with the staff recommendation, so I guess we need to move along one way or another. If you want to make an alternate motion.
I have no problem with staff's recommendation. I was hoping if it made the board feel more comfortable to not allocate it to water and drain and Bay Ridge that way. That's why I brought up Fund 100. But I have no problem with staff's.
I think until we hear back for more historical perspective or whatever, I would move that we accept staff's recommendation at this time.
I think if we take a public comment.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I'll second the motion. Any discussion? Ms. Vega?
Director Kelly?
Yes.
President Sparks?
Yes.
Vice President Ohilski?
Yes.
Director Sustania?
No.
Director Sennett?
Yeah.
Okay, that's the end of the items for tonight.
Mr. President, we're coming up on the 10 o'clock hour.
We're going to have to make a motion to continue past 10 for public comment.
There's no additional items on the agenda. The only question is whether we're going to go back to closed session, and we would need a motion to continue.
We haven't taken general public comment yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I apologize.
I'm making a motion to continue to accept
As I've said before, was put into place to make sure that the public got a chance to interact with you, that you heard what the public had to say, and then you could really discharge your duties as a representatives of the entire district. Now, I know we used to have bigger meetings than this and all the rest of stuff, but putting it at the foot of the calendar is not a good idea, and I urge you to rethink that. And again, my comment earlier about not having public comment that's more structured than you had it is not a good idea either. You can't discuss three different things at one time. It'd be better to have them discussed separately and cleared up. Anyway, that's my contribution.
Thank you for your comment. Next speaker, please.
You're welcome. Well, I'm not getting paid to attend these glorious meetings, so I feel it's a great sacrifice. Oh, Martha Golden. My name hasn't changed. So I feel it's a great sacrifice to stay here until 10 o'clock at night, or I suppose if you hadn't finished your agenda and had voted to extend the time, it might have been 10:30 or 10:45 or 11 o'clock. But most of the people, even those who attend these meetings with some regularity, don't bother. They're working people, they're people with families, and they don't have the energy to come here and attend these meetings in order to have their opportunity to discuss issues with you that they think are of importance to the community and to you. It is not the way the CSD should be communicating with its community and have the community communicate with it. Public comment ought to be restored to the early part of the meeting, general public comment. In fact, I can think of a lot of items that you had at the beginning of the agenda that could very well have put the people to sleep who weren't already asleep. At the end of the agenda, they required no work on anybody's part except to say, yeah, let's accept those reports and get on with it. So public comment should be put at the beginning of the agenda. That's what you're here for, to hear from the public and to act on behalf of the public. If you don't hear from them, you really don't get much of an opportunity to act on their behalf. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker, please.
Dave Dugan, Los Osos. A friend of mine got a phone call today. He related it to me. Somebody from the county says, what's going on? People are running around here, scurrying there, having meetings and a lot of work, and they're not really familiar with the county's Los Osos project, but they say it has something to do with it. And I suppose it had something to do with the letter from the Coastal Commission, which was a huge bomb. And as well as I had sent an email to staff with some of the same concerns just 2 weeks ago,
or we can still go on some of the same issues. And how do you get around this? Questions. And lo and behold, they're in the Coastal Commission letter, too. Not every one of them, because, of course, they covered more area than I did. And I explained the last few meetings at the Board of Supervisors that you're setting yourself up to have this project stopped in its tracks, regardless of stimulus funds. You're not on a time schedule order, so you don't have to worry about fines. But to take your time, your due diligence, and to not circumvent or try to do an end run around the process. And I think this hurry up that they've been trying to pull, I think, has come back to bite them, and they were warned. And there's more down the road. There's more to come. This is just the tip of the iceberg. And, of course, plenty of us have gone there and warned them, don't circumvent the process. Don't be biased in these areas. Well, I just want to finish my comment. It was 3 minutes? Well, I'll continue my thought next time. I'll be back.
Thank you for your comment. Next speaker, please.
Rachel Rosenthal, Assessors. President Sparks, I just want to thank you for getting rid of the fence, working on donating your volunteer time to get rid of the fence, and all you're doing for the getting the different committees educated and the drainage, having Allison to orient and bring that whole group back into the process is really great. So good luck with the rest. I don't have that much time to participate in the tax discussion anymore, but good luck.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
A public speaker was speaking, and I made the comment that I agree with that person's comments. And later I read the minutes, and what had happened was I specified that I agreed with certain comments, but I didn't specify I agreed with all the comments. And unfortunately, in the minutes, it only showed those comments that person made that I completely disagreed with. But in this case, David Dugan spoke earlier, and I'm very comfortable saying that I agree with his comments. So let the minutes show that I agreed with his comments. This has to do with the California Coastal Commission. They are, in fact, a submission to the draft EIR. Unfortunately, and I think the county is going to correct that, but fortunately the EIR is now final, at least on paper, but I think that the Coastal Commission comments are going to go back in. The reason I'm mentioning this is it's very unfortunate. I would have loved for this to have been a good draft EIR, and for a project to come out of it, even if it's a project that's the preferred project, and that it actually hit the ground running. But unfortunately, it is the comments of the agencies involved that are giving me fear that this is going to be a very long process. I think the responsible people in town who believe themselves experts or are experts or anything would really behoove themselves to help the county come up with more mitigations and help the project along, because unfortunately it's just not a good DIR. It's going to run into a lot of problems. I've looked at various parts of it. I think Dave Dugan addressed some of those. In 2005, this community voted to, some would say stop, but I would say modify a project. Well, it definitely moved out of town. In 2008, this community voted to assess themselves. In 2009, this community, and that vote again is on a survey, voted for gravity. And I personally don't believe gravity is the best system, but I'm also a member of this community that wants to represent the whole community, and therefore I believe that's basically what the community wants. But can the community really get what it wants is really a problem coming out of the CIR. So I hope you continue to be involved. Of course, you're a water provider, not a sewage company, at least not for another 3 years, plus whatever time it takes, years. My time is up. Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional speakers?
Richard Margetson. I'm going to spend my 3 minutes talking about public comment being the last item on the agenda. And I would hope that at some point there's a discussion of how it got placed at the end of the agenda, who determined that, and for what reason. The last election, two directors, Mr. Ohelski and Maria Kelly, if you go back to your literature, go back to some of your answers at the debate about being more transparent, being more open, bringing more of the community into the process, giving public comment at 10:10 in the evening is completely inappropriate to that goal. Three people asked me tonight to phone them when we were getting close to public comment. I phoned all three of them. They said at this late hour they couldn't come down. You take out a huge segment of this community by having public comment at the end of the meeting. 7 o'clock is convenient for a family with children. How many do we have a meeting when there was a discussion about how public comment was handled there? And he was kind of the lone wolf on the discussion. He said, if I have to sit here for 3 hours and listen to public comment, that's my responsibility to my constituents. And you have that responsibility. You need to follow through with it. And if the meetings run too long and it's inconvenient for you to be here till late hour, then maybe you shouldn't run again, or maybe you shouldn't have run in the first place. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Any additional speakers?
Hi, I'm Jan Harbor, and I live in Los Osos. And I just wanted to remind everybody that there's a RAC committee meeting that focuses on our basin water. It's this Saturday, April 4th, 8:30 at the board chambers. Now I want to talk about public comment myself. I think whenever you decide to have it is fine. I think, yes, it is difficult to have it at the end of the day. I think after a while, some things become irrelevant when you hear them over and over. I understand people want to get heard. There, you can also write to the CSD, to the board. You can write hard copy. You can go onto our website, lososocsd.org, and write the board anytime. I think late nights are hard for anybody. I think 7 o'clock is just as hard as 10 o'clock. So I'm just another point of view for the board. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. That concludes our public comment, and we're going to have member comments and then close. Do we have any motion to continue? We had a motion to continue public comment. Any motion to continue to go back into closed session to resume any discussion from that we did not complete tonight?
Okay. I would just ask District Council if there's a reason that we need to go back into closed session this evening first. I mean, I'll be willing to go back in if we have a reason.
Well, I don't think that there's anything that is in the closed session agenda requires discussion where there would be an immediate consequence before the next meeting. If that's your answer, if that's the question, that's my response. On the other hand, you know, getting briefed on legal counsel on the matters listing on the code under the closed session is a policy issue from the board. You know, I don't see anything coming up that is going to, during the next 2 weeks, that is going to be dispositive in any one matter.
What did he say?
Well, I guess I would like to be brief, so I'm going to make a motion.
Let me rephrase it here, because I do have this report that's 5 pages long on what I just said.
Oh, thank you.
So I'll make the motion to continue for closed session after the adjournment of the regular session.
Mm. I'll second that.
Ms. Vega? To continue in a closed session.
President Sparks?
Yes.
Director Cesena?
Yes.
Director Sennett?
I'm in.
Director Kelly?
Peer pressure, yes.
Vice President Ohilski?
Yes. Although I would make a request that we have like a 5-minute break before we go into closed session.
Got it. Okay, so any closing board member comments? Director Kelly?
I would like to comment to the public comment question. I was one of the people, I don't know, I think there are a few of us that wanted to try it. LOCAC does public comment at the end. It seemed fairly effective. As a director, not only am I really interested in what general public comment is, but what I noticed is that we lose a lot of people when we're actually taking care of business that pertains to the services of the district or business before the district. And one of my concerns was that people were leaving before that. And I've actually really appreciated the last couple of meetings, getting more input into the business aspect of the district. So for me, I mean, I weigh the pros and cons, and it's kind of, it does go both ways. But this is, and I think you obviously noticed it really relevant tonight, that this is the only time we get to get together.
I think it is important that we allow, opportunities during the specific elements of the presentations to allow like a discourse between the presenters and the public and get feedback within the context so we don't lose the momentum of the discussion. And I think that's a valuable part of a public discussion of any item.
Vice President Ohilski.
Thank you. Is this director comment? And
yes, director comments.
I would just like to remind those that may still be watching or that tomorrow is your last chance to get your major items out in the trash for the major collection day. Some of us that get our trash picked up tomorrow will be going home later tonight and taking our stuff out to the curb. I think that what Director Sennett said is important. The fact that this board does allow a lot of back and forth and comment during the business items. And I think that's important for informational purposes for both the public and the board as well as staff. So I think that's an important thing. You know, whether public comments at the beginning or the end, I can see both sides of that point, quite frankly. But I think the fact that there is the opportunity to have more of a back and forth conversation and there's more dialogue is the important thing that's happening here, quite frankly. So. And I would also make just two announcements. Again, we're going to try to schedule an Emergency Service Advisory Committee for next week sometime. It will be noticed to allow adequate opportunity to comment on the street ends. And then, as already been mentioned, the RAC is meeting on Saturday at 8:30, the Board of Supervisors. Thank you.
Thank you. My final comments are, you know, when it comes to the decision of the public comment, I work with the general manager said it, and I would state this, that responsibility, you know, I take that responsibility, and I weigh a lot of factors. It depends on what's on the agenda, how much is on the agenda. I appreciate, and I've noticed in the past, a lot of times we'll get public comment, but it ventures into business items on the agendas. So we'll have it, if we would have it up front, we don't get that fresh in our minds when we discuss those items. Tonight we did have 4 general public comment items, and 4 of them were on general public comment. So it may change. Again, it's going to be agenda dependent. And I do like, you know, having the discussion. I think we do get more discussion from the public on the agenda items, and it's fresher in our mind. Whereas in the past, when we had general public comment, we'd have stuff that would get intermingled with the action we were taking later. So one other thought that we've discussed is the possibility of directors to increase the accessibility, you know, conducting an open house, rotating directors at the CSD office on Saturdays for a couple hours so that we, you know, get additional opportunities to interact with the public. And I just wanted to say as an announcement, there is the American Association of University Women, April 26th. They'll have their annual garden tour. Their contact number is 771-9180, and I believe you'll be able to get tickets at Miners and Volumes of Pleasure. This is an annual event, and it's very important because the proceeds from this, they sponsor a lot of educational youth activities, Morro Bay essay contests. The associations throughout California, including ours, sponsor seventh grade girls going to universities for their Tech Trek program every summer. Our county sponsors up to 20, the chapters in the county of San Luis Obispo sponsor up to 25 students. They spend a week at universities for science and math education. And it's a real, a very good cause. So just wanted to mention that. That's April 26th, their annual garden tour. And with that, we'll be adjourned.